your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to Alchemy. I'm excited and honored to be joined today with no other than Lauren Gertner, the godfather of cannabis and co-founder of Tokyo Smoke. Lauren, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here, especially in these times.
For sure. So Lauren, you're on a mission to make the world a better place through cannabis and design excellence. So kind of just to kick things off a little bit, talk to us about your entire journey into this world. I know it goes back quite a while.
Great. As most people don't realize, because most people in the cannabis business have been in it for under 10 years, that this has been going on for a long time. And so for me, it's a 50-year journey that started when I was 15 years old in Jamaica, where I happened to smoke some cannabis, to sort of 1980, where my mother and my sister moved to Northern California, to today what's called the Emerald Triangle. My mother was a hippie, and my sister and her husband decided to go out and live in Northern California. And so I was around the early days of, call it, the illegal cannabis business, or what I call the land race in California. And then got really interested in it in the 90s, really at the beginning of 1990, because Israel started to talk about cannabinoids. And then in 1998 was the, when I got into it, I would call legally, was the class action suit. There was a class action suit in Canada that forced the Canadian government to provide medical marijuana. And that was the beginning of my journey into medical cannabis. And in 2002, the Canadian government gave out a RFP, a request for a proposal for somebody to grow cannabis for the Canadian government. And I, like the guy who liked the razor, bought the company, looked at cannabis and thought, I really want to invest in this industry. And so in 2002, we invested in the company that won that RFP called Prairie Plant Systems. And in 2004, we took that company public. So that was the first medical marijuana cannabis company to really go public in North America. And we fought through that decade. And in the next decade, at the beginning of 2013, the Canadian government decided to give out commercial licenses. And we formed a company called PharmaCann, which today is Cronos, and formed a company called Tokyo Smoke. And in 2017, the Canadian government decided to allow recreational use. And as I'll talk about as we wind up in 2020, living through this crazy time we're living through, medical marijuana is an essential service.
Just hearing, you know, what you've been through, even in the last 20 plus years, I mean, you have really shaped this new economy and what we're dealing with today. So obviously a lot of people, especially in the United States, you know, getting involved in the commercial and recreational, we should be thanking you for all the work that you've done up until now to make this a reality. So it's amazing to hear that story. And, you know, I think a lot of people are just, when they look at you and they look at your life, it's pretty amazing.
Thanks. I think the thanks really goes to all the people who helped make it happen along the way. And this morning, one of the emails that I got was from the last prisoner, from Steve D'Angelo, and who's fighting now to get, you know, prisoners, people who have been in jail for, you know, minor cannabis crimes, to be released, given that, you know, the virus is going on.
So, Lauren, I think, you know, one thing that I was really taken aback by was, you know, your experience across so many different verticals. So aside from the cannabis space, you know, you were, you know, in the fashion world and retail and architecture and real estate and even finance. And it would be great for you to maybe, you know, talk a little bit about how your experience has differed, you know, from all of those sectors.
Good question. I mean, I think that the first thing I would say was that in cannabis, we learned early that it was a regulated industry. And for me, it was the first time that I had ever been in a regulated industry. And one of our early mantras, which is still today, was embrace regulation. And so we said, here it is, let's figure out how to deal with it as opposed to change it. And so that was something that in all the other industries I had never been in was regulated to that extent.
Lauren, do you think a lot of people who want to get involved in this space almost look at the regulations and the compliance and say, you know what, that's just too many hurdles to get through?
Yeah, I think that's probably that, or they have an attitude about different, you can spend your entire time fighting the regulations.
Right.
And I just didn't want to do that. I said, okay, here are the regulations. Let's figure out how to work with the regulator. And so that was something that was really different. I guess for me, you know, having all those experiences were really what gave me the depth to be able to, you know, be in a new industry. And for me, as we'll talk probably more about in this conversation, I don't know, probably when I first got involved with cannabis, I was 15 years old, I got addicted to design.
Was it because of the cannabis that you got addicted to design?
I don't think so. I think I was addicted to design before I got involved with cannabis. I think cannabis certainly played a huge role in me being able to elevate my design interest, my design capabilities, all of that. But no, I became addicted to design early on.
Okay.
And it became, you know, a love of beauty, detail, all of that. And that's what took me into architecture. And from architecture, you know, I learned the fundamentals, the history, the education, and architecture gave me the credibility to have a seat at the table in the design world. And my life was being defined by sort of every 10 years. And so I spent 10 years being educated in architecture and then practicing it. And then I spent 10 years in the fashion business. Mm-hmm. And as Malcolm Gladwell says, you know, you need 10,000 hours to understand an industry. I got those in each of those industries. And fashion taught me a huge amount that probably I use more than anything else because it was my first introduction to brands. And so in each case, whether it was fashion, I'll start with architecture. Early on, I learned that there was design. And then there was the business of architecture. And so I learned the business of architecture, which was the building business. And when I went into that, it was a dirty, you know, it's a construction business. Mm-hmm. And we layered design onto it through architecture, and it became a design-based industry. And the same was in fashion. When it to fashion, my father had these factories that in those days were pretty incredible for factories, but they were still factories. And we went in and put design in, and design allowed us to make it a, you know, design-oriented, a beautiful industry. And so when I came into the cannabis space, it was a lot of, you know, black market growers who were growing in their garages in, you know, what I would call dirty places. And in our case, we added design to all of that. And that design went from the brand right down to the factory floor, where, you know, our grow rooms were spotless. Everything was spotless. Good place to be today with the virus.
So, Lauren, you know, I think one thing that I really wanted to hear from you about is everything that you did with your son around Tokyo Smoke. So, you know, you guys started off as a coffee shop, and then you really built this community around it. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about Tokyo Smoke in particular, but I really want you to focus around community and how important that is in the world of cannabis.
Good. Okay, well, Tokyo Smoke didn't start as a coffee shop. It actually started as a clothing line. And so I had just come off working with a guy named Joe Memoran. And Joe, I created a brand called Joe Fresh. And I got called by an accounting firm who would call me, you know, every couple of months when they had a retail or creative business that had gone from sort of being an audit client into a troubled client. And so I'd been asked to go out and look at this second generation clothing company. And the guy there, who was the second generation, wanted to start a contemporary clothing company. And so I worked with him for almost about 8 months creating a contemporary clothing line. And as that was unfolding, I was trying to figure out how to launch that line. And typically when you launch a brand, you open a store. And I just spent the past, you know, 18 months traveling around the world and spending a lot of time in coffee shops. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to launch a clothing line in a coffee shop? And at the same time as I was doing all that, we had taken our second cannabis company public called PharmaCann. And I was starting to think a lot about how important it was going to be to have a cannabis brand. And all of the cannabis companies that were starting up as companies, not as brands. And if you look at all the early companies, it wasn't about creating a brand. It was about creating a company that held a cannabis license that allowed them to grow. Mm-hmm. And so somewhere along the line, as I was developing this brand, it became coffee, clothing, and cannabis.
Triple C's.
And I had decided all of that and created all of that on my own. And I owned a building in downtown Toronto, a shitty old building that one of my tenants had moved out. And I had this loading dock that was no longer being used. And I decided to create a coffee shop, clothing store, and a shipping container. And I had done all of that and had decided to call it Tokyo Smoke. And then my son, who had been at Google for about 7 years at that time, I was talking to him all the time as I was creating this, and he called me one day and he said, you know, Dad, I'm going to leave Google. And I want to be your partner in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's crazy. And he said to me, you know, you've always owned everything you've done. And I want to own what I'm going to do. And I'd like to be your partner and do that with Tokyo Smoke. And so he came along coming out of the digital world. And there I was, steep in the old mm-hmm. world. And I remember early on having a conversation with him about how one of my other businesses, we were in the condo business, and we were spending money every week to have full page ads in the newspaper.
So he obviously helped you really align into the new age, huh?
Well, he said to me one day, he said, hey, Dad, like, newspaper advertising died. I don't know why you're spending all that money doing that. And I said, cool. And he said, no, like, look at me in the eyes. Like, you're spending a crazy amount of money doing this. If you didn't do that, you'd save a lot of money and you could do it way more efficiently online. And in fact, in that industry, I was late to the game. But when it came to cannabis, that was what really changed us, is that went from me creating a brand to him creating a community. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, what we sold to Canopy for all that money was a community. And that was done, you know, as simple as it was to sign up on our website and we'll give you a free, send you a free pack of rolling papers. You know, to other things that, you know, in my world, you would have spent a lot of money, but we didn't spend a lot of money because it doesn't cost a lot of money to build a community.
Right. And I think, you know, from a community perspective too, I mean, yesterday I had Jim Belushi on the show and he was singing your praises. And, you know, I think when everyone looks at what you're doing and, you know, sees what you've done in the industry, but to hear that from Jim was pretty amazing. How did you meet Jim?
Jim was, you know, along the journey, I met a lot of people. And I tell this quick sort of story, is that it's the 80-20 rule. You meet like so many people, mm-hmm. right? And you, at the end of the day, you meet very few people that are really real. And so I met Jim through Dan Aykroyd. Mm-hmm. And I met Dan Aykroyd through a friend named Brett Wilson. And within 5 minutes of meeting Dan Aykroyd, he said, "You got to meet Jimmy." And I ended up spending the rest of the day with Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi, including one of the highlights of my life was that I got to, it was a Saturday, and immediately upon meeting Dan, he said, "Hey, you got to meet Jimmy. And by the way, we got to have a party tonight." And I said, "You're here to play at Brett Wilson's party." He said, no, that's not a party. We have to have a party because you're here, Lauren." And he said to his handler, he said, he had a suite at the end of the floor. He said, "Take the rest of the floor and order 30 cheeseburgers and 30 milkshakes and 30 bottles of wine and 30 bottles of champagne." And we had a party and we watched Saturday Night Live. And if you can imagine, for somebody like me who's, you know, born in the 50s, to be able to do that with the two of them, it was really a highlight of my life. But what I say about Jim is one of the most incredible people I've ever met in his relentlessness in his pursuit. And cannabis was something, when I first met Jim, I thought, okay, big shot, sure. But as I watched him in his relentless pursuit with Dan and with, you know, the legacy of his brother to build the Blues Brothers brand, is truly amazing. I mean, I had the experience to go and see the farm just before all of this happened. And it was a highlight again of seeing a entrepreneur with a talent for, you know, the movie business, to create his niche and his brand and his legacy in the industry.
And he's so passionate, like just has so much passion and energy around what he's doing. And I think that was something too that, you know, I really felt when I talked to him. It was just, it was really, really nice.
If you look, Jeff, at any of the real brand builders, it was built out of passion. Mm-hmm. And it was built around their belief and what their brand stood for. And Jim is so much that brand. And what's incredible about it was he didn't create the brand. It was a brand that was created by his brother and Dan. But in every brand success, it comes down to who is the keeper of the brand. And in the Belushi brand, or in the Blues Brother brand, it's Jim Belushi. And everything about it and every decision is made around the keeper of the brand.
Right. So true. So Lauren, let's talk a little bit, you know, let's kind of jump back a little bit into design. You know, I think one thing that we see with a ton of brands, obviously, you know, every day launching, is that the packaging around these products is, they're really beautiful. So just coming from you and, you know, your super focus and expertise into design, like, how do you look at design in the cannabis world?
I think we're in such early days in terms of brands. You could name them on your two hands. Mm-hmm. And each one of those brands, I would say a key to their success is their design. And again, I think as this industry gets more design professionals into it, it will allow these brands to really grow and keep their identity. And so what's happened now is a lot of the brands were created by companies, and they're just beginning to understand that a brand is a really important part of the company. And as they do that, they start to build, you know, people and a department around the brand, and they start to do the analytics, and they start to do all of the stuff that you do around a brand that nobody has done in the industry as of yet. So if you look at alcohol, or you look at tobacco, or, you know, you look at pharmaceuticals, they're so far beyond in anything they do than we are in cannabis today. You know, I'm reading a book today, you know, right now I've got the time to read all kinds of things, and I'm a readaholic, and I'm reading a book about salt and sugar and fat.
Oh yeah. I'm reading that now too, actually.
Okay. And they know everything about sugar. Yes. We don't know anything about cannabis. And when they're talking about it, it's so interesting because they're talking about coffee. And in 1989, which is not very long ago, there were only four types of coffee: strong, weak, medium, and roasted.
Right. Today there's like a million different variations.
Because we know everything about coffee. Right. What's incredible is there isn't a person that you or I know that doesn't know exactly what their dose of coffee is.
Where is it from? How's the bean roasted? Like,
but more than anything, Jeff, their dose.
Right.
Right? Well, yeah, like I want one shot. I want two shots. They know how many shots they can have a day. And a lot of people, their life revolves around that. So, you know, what I've tried to do is look at elevated experiences and learn from that in the cannabis industry and use the precedents from those industries to look at how this will evolve.
Yeah, I do think that with a lot of the markets becoming recreational, especially in the U.S., you know, where people just are starting to experience, you know, cannabis products, it's true. They don't know because they don't do it and they've never tried it, or they've had only a few experiences and they don't know the dosage, right? So as more and more people start being curious about it, even myself included, you know, I've always kind of shied away from it because I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to be on a level that is where I'm out of control, or I'm not, you know, I don't know how I'm going to feel. But then after trying different things and you know exactly whatever the euphoria is, like, you know, okay, I only need just a tiny little bit. Or,
well, it goes back to how much of an elevated experience do I want to have from this product?
Right.
So I know in coffee, I know in alcohol, I, the godfather of cannabis, doesn't know in cannabis. I do know, in fact, but it's hard to translate that in an early industry where they're just developing a supply chain management and consistency.
Right. Well, and everybody does it differently, whether it's extraction or whether it's flour, right? Everyone's, they're different. There's so many different strains and products out there, right? It's hard to differentiate between different brands and companies.
Right, but that's not how industries are built.
Right. So, you know, when you're thinking about industries, like what industry do you think, you know, cannabis will disrupt the most?
I think it'll disrupt the most in the CPG category. So we're seeing alcohol being disrupted already. And, you know, you've got Constellation. I always say that I've been incredibly lucky to have been involved in the three disruptions so far. The first company I started eventually got sold to a pharmaceutical company called Sanofi. And that was where we had a patent for THC and a Listerine strip.
Ah.
And our second company that we created, PharmaCann, which became Cronos, got a couple of $1 billion investments from Altria. And so that's, call it tobacco.
Yeah.
And then, you know, selling Tokyo Smoke to Canopy alongside Constellation making their investment, I saw alcohol. And how they intend to disrupt. I've seen how tobacco is disrupting through, you know, the vape pen, hopefully, or maybe, to pharmaceutical companies coming out with different, you know, gel caps and pills. What we haven't seen is how it will disrupt and change the CPG market. And I say that because the regulations aren't there yet. So because of dosing, we don't know really about eating it as a food.
Right.
And as in the book that you're reading and I'm reading, the food industry, they are relentless about knowing exactly what they know about the products that they play in.
Right. Well, do you think, though, that, you know, at least from, you know, obviously you're in Toronto, I'm in New York, but from a, you know, a federal perspective in the U.S., like if it was federally legal, like there would be more people involved in testing and like, do you think that will change things?
Oh, yeah. No. I think that in what I call normalization.
Right.
Which I think we're 5 years to 10 years from seeing. And that's in a world where it's legal everywhere.
Right.
And that's where there is a full-on rec market and a full-on medical market. And that could be 10 years away.
Right. I mean, I will say that from a medical perspective and being in this industry now, I have seen there are just so many people and so many ailments where the medical side, it really just, it plays a huge part of their life with pain and management. You know, obviously recreational side is very different, but you know, it's so important. Like it is such a needed focus right now that a lot of people don't think about. They think, oh, you know, it's, you know, cannabis, you're getting high. It's so powerful for so many different things.
Yeah, no, the big win is in medical. And I learned that early on when one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world, and I was friendly with the son who was running it at the time, said to me, Lauren, when you have a pill, call me. And because we live in a world that people are accustomed to taking pills. And when we figure out what are the right formulations for any of what I call the four sort of clusters, which is anti-anxiety, pain, sleep, and anti-inflammatory, when we know what are the right formulations and the optimum delivery for each of those four categories,
mm-hmm.
It'll change the world dramatically because you will go into, call it a GNC, And instead of every product having vitamin, whatever, it will have CBD or THC in it.
Right. Yeah. And we're seeing a lot of that, you know, recently too, right? CBD is taking the world by storm. I mean, it seems to be everywhere these days, you know?
Yeah. Right now it's what I call a fad.
Right.
Right. But behind this fad is one of the most incredible industries in the world. I mean, imagine something that has any kind of efficacy in those four areas I just talked about. Pain. Who doesn't have pain? Who doesn't sleep well? You know, who has anti-anxiety?
The whole world right now.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's why consumption of cannabis is up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been experimenting with a ton of different CBD products in the last couple of weeks, just because I got to tell you, I have not slept a single night in a month.
Yeah. Well, imagine how you'll feel in 2 months. But I think that, you know, when I look back and I think about, you know, what are the most amazing moments in my life, call it proud moments. In the past 2 weeks, it's been one of my proudest moments, is that cannabis is an essential service. And we're talking 10 years ago, it was illegal.
It's amazing.
To use cannabis. And now not only is it legal, but it's an essential service, even when it's not quite really legal around the world.
Right. I mean, I've had, you know, folks on the show the last 2 weeks, you know, everybody from, you know, Columbia Care to Cresco, you know, large MSOs. And this has been the topic of conversation every single day. Every show is, it's essential. It's incredible. Sales are up, you know, can't keep product off the shelves right now. And, you know, people are just like, wow, it is a big step for the sector.
Yeah. And for me, I guess it was just after sort of creating Tokyo Smoke. I sort of woke up one day and I thought, there's a global business here. And then the more I started playing with that, I realized that there was a global, sustainable economic model behind this global industry. And I started investing in places like Jamaica and realizing that in Jamaica, they used to supply all of the sugarcane and all of the bauxite around the world, and that today they don't supply any of that. All they have is tourism. And here in Kaya, we have 500 people working for us. And I thought, wow, we're creating an economy that pays tax. And then I went to Hawaii and was able to be involved in a company there called Aloha Green. And again, Hawaii used to supply 80% of the pineapples worldwide. Today, they don't supply any. Yet cannabis employs thousands, I think probably, I'm guessing more than 5,000 people in Hawaii that pay tax, that work, that didn't work in an industry before. And then I went to Africa and went into a company called Lesotho and invested in a company there that, again, this is 500 people that never worked before, never paid tax before. In this case, people that had never used washrooms before. And so I realized that not only were we, you know, taking a product and making it legal and creating a medical industry, but we were creating a global, sustainable economic model. And the only thing for me that's left on that journey, other than continuing to build that journey, is to make cannabis the greenest industry in the world. And we're early days, we're built on packaging upon packaging upon packaging. and we're becoming a huge waste company and industry. And part of my mantra today is I won't invest in any company that isn't interested in being the greenest company in the world.
Love it.
And I won't invest in any company that doesn't have a view towards giving back. So it's becoming, I think you'll see as we pull out of this, and I think it was going to happen before this, is I don't think people will invest in things that aren't impacting the world. And so I think the people that will come out of this that have money are going to say, I'm going to use that money now to make this a world a better place. Because whether it's the virus or the hurricanes or all the things that we've suffered over the past, call it, couple of years, that we said, oh, those things will never happen to us, are happening because at our core, we didn't have a purpose about how we take care of the world.
I love that mantra, and I think it's so important. And, you know, I love that that's what you stand for. And I think more people need to be aligned, you know, around sustainability and the future. So well said. So Lauren, I just have one other quick question for you before we go. And, you know, I've been hearing about you for months from Chad, and, you know, everything he said is true, but I'm just curious, like, how did you get involved with the Philo board?
Again, like my entire sort of journey in life in the industry was somebody said to me, you need to meet this guy. And so I knew somebody who knew Chad, and they said, you have to meet Chad. And like everything that was going on in my life, I said, sure, like I'll do that. And he said, no, no, you have to meet Chad now. And within hours of that conversation, Chad was sitting in my office. And
In Toronto.
He was here. They were on a road show. And mm-hmm. I knew about the road show because you don't come into my city and raise money in the cannabis industry without me knowing about it.
Right.
So I knew that that was happening, but I didn't and hadn't met Chad. And for the most part, my success in the investment world had nothing to do with an idea or an industry. And some people would say, oh, Lauren, you're so smart. You saw cannabis coming. It wasn't that I saw cannabis coming. I would like to think I did in some ways, but it was the person that I met who wanted to take on the journey. And so I've invested in people. And for the most part, I think I've been pretty good, and I've invested in really good people. And it was those people that were my success. And Chad is one of those. So you meet a person who has the same values as you have and thinks the same way that you think and has the same passion for what they do that you have for what you do. And when I meet those people, because it sounds like, well, everybody's one of those people, I hug them to death. And I invest a little bit of money with them and watch them. And then I invest a little more money with them and I watch them. And really what happens is I develop a friendship. And in my case, because I'm old, a mentorship. And when I first met Chad, I honestly didn't really understand what he was doing. I don't think I had ever heard the word malware, but it was, I just liked everything about him. And I've watched over the past year, again, through probably the most difficult time in the cannabis industry.
Right.
Him shine every day.
That's awesome. And so true. And I get to work with him every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
No, it's really, you know, when it comes down to it, it's about attracting the brightest and smartest people to the industry. And we were really desperate for people like you, Jeff, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're even more desperate for people like you today, because the opportunity is so huge, but we're fucking it up every day because we don't understand it.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that really attracted me to the space is, you know, we need to basically, with all the things that we've learned in the last 20 years in tech and advertising, and apply that to, you know, the cannabis world, because it's, you know, it hasn't been there. And we need more people who have had big wins and had big experiences to really normalize this industry in a big way. You know, you guys have obviously done an amazing job to get us where we are today. Now it needs a little push, right? Get over that hill.
Oh yeah, no, it needs a lot, because in business, when you do something exciting, you enact change. It's really exciting at the beginning, and you build a team and you have some wins and everybody's all fired up. And then classic, you hit the brick wall. And there's, you know, two ways to go. You know, you go back to the way it was, i.e. we go back to a black market industry, or we push through that wall with all the energy and all the smarts we have to create a new industry. And we're at that tipping point. I can tell you from being around a long time, we're at the tipping point. We are not through the brick wall.
Right. Yeah, there's still a lot to do, and we have a lot of work ahead of us, but we're going to get through it.
I believe that's what our purpose is. And so, you know, on sort of reflecting, is you can be anything you can as long as you're happy. So follow your passion. And don't give up hope. And I'd end this by saying to everybody, you know, my standard has always been be high, happy, and well. And I would say right now, be high, happy, and most importantly, healthy right now.
Yes.
So Jeff, thanks for the opportunity to share my views of the world in cannabis.
Lauren, thank you so much. It was great having you on the show. Great insight, and honored to have you on. And thank you so much for everything that you've done to bring us to where we are today. This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.